This is The Real Magic Podcast. Learn about great design and use it to get great results. Now your hosts, Greg Merrilees and Alan Nunez.
Hello, listener, and thank you for joining Greg and I today for The Real Magic Design Podcast, where we try and unpack our experience to help designers and business owners understand how to create amazing designs and work together to make design that's profitable. I'm Alan from Pixel Partners, and here is my co-host, the one, the only, the fabulous Greg from Studio One Design.
Yeah, how are you, buddy? It's good to be back.
I'm great. Looking forward to this podcast. It's a topic that has been striking a chord for me lately. So, you know, Greg, what are we talking about today?
Why brand guidelines suck.
Oh, don't they? No, they don't really. We'll talk about it more in a sec. But, mate, before we get into it, what have you been up to, mate?
This is all about, you know, the creme de la creme of design. I went to Cirque du Soleil, and I mean, you've been there yourself.
Oh, my God.
How amazing is everything about the performance, and, you know, from the choreography to the costumes to even the stage and the engineering, and the talent themselves are just incredible.
To me, it's miraculous that they can pull something like that off night in, night out, over and over again, with just such amazing precision. And you're right, the design, the costumes, the sets are phenomenal.
Aren't they? Yeah, it's like the pinnacle of design in every way.
Yeah, that's a good case study. You know, I think designers can just take inspiration from some of the stuff that Cirque du Soleil do. I mean, the colours that they use, the way the everything interacts, it's beautiful. It's awesome.
Yeah, cool, man. So what have you been up to, buddy?
Mate, I am preparing to be away for a little while. It's roughly a month where I'll be. I'm not away for the whole time, but I'll be off the air. So I've got a variety of conferences, short business trips, and then I've got a holiday with the family to Hawaii. So that's going to be really nice. And you know what? Sometimes getting away, you know, as a business owner, we often, you know, dig our heels in for the long haul. But getting away for a substantial period of time, I find really good. It allows me to review all the things on my agenda, make sure the right people are doing the right things, get things off my plate, and ensure that I have somebody responsible for it so that I can focus on my business rather than in the business.
Yeah, it's a good test when you go away to see how it goes without you.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm always contactable, but every time I've done this, I find that I get contacted a lot less than I would expect.
Yep.
And look, just on a little side note, you know, in my business, Pixel Partners, for a while, we were employing people in-house to do a variety of tasks, including admin and web development, and we have dissolved those departments, and we now have an outsourced admin team, like a third-party company that we contract to do our admin. I think it's just a real lesson for me to focus on what I'm good at. You know, my team, they're designers, they're creative people. They don't know how to manage administrators. They don't know if they're doing a good job or not. So by doing this, that external company has their own quality checks, has their own management, has their own project managers to monitor the work and check that it's being done well. So, you know, it's a little, I guess it's like Pixel Partners for designers. You know, you can have a designer that you freelance to, a single designer, and you have no redundancy. You've got a, you know, triple check everything, or you can use a third party company who has all those checks in place. So that's been really great. They're absolutely awesome. It's
good. So is it more economical in the long run?
It depends on how you view it. You know, it does cost me more per hour than having an internal employee, but then we don't have to have two or three other people within the team monitoring and managing those jobs. If you take up their time, it probably balances out fairly well.
There you go, and less headache.
Absolutely, and quality work, really. I mean, this is what they do all day, every day.
Sure.
So they have systems in place that just mean when I request something, it gets done extremely fast. And really, really well. I generally have one or two people that I'm in contact with all the time, but I have redundancy. So if one of them's off sick, there's another team member that can step in and work the processes. So
perfect. Yeah, which is exactly the way your business works and mine.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's exactly the way we do it. You know, we have team members where, you know, a client can come to us request something, but if that team member's away, somebody else can very easily pick it up and run with it. So.
Absolutely, and there's systems and processes all the way through.
Yep, tick, tick, tick.
Good, good stuff, mate. All right, well, let's get stuck into this topic, yeah? Why brand guidelines suck?
They do not. Or do they?
Do they?
Do they? Look, you know what? They could and they couldn't. Or they do and they don't. I don't know how to put this.
Stop sitting on the fence, mate. Why?
Well, you know what? Brand guidelines. I do think they're awesome. I think the first question we have to ask is, you know, what is a brand guideline and how should it be used, right? And if used well and implemented well, they can be fabulous for both the company and the designer, you know? I mean, at the end of the day, a brand guide is a document, right, a formal document that defines the brand's character, their target market and audience, and gives style guides for how the brand elements should be utilized. You know, everything from, you know, logos, colors, imagery, you know, and depending on what you do, if you do a lot of web stuff, there would be a bigger section on, you know, the how-tos of implementing the brand character into the web, or if you do TV or radio and so on and so forth, you know. So I think a lot of people have a bit of a style guide as opposed to a brand guideline. What do you think?
Sure, yeah, absolutely. Look, I think the key word in it is guide. And, you know, that's how the designer that's been given a style guide or guidelines should be using it as just that, just a guide, and still use their creativity to bring out the best of the brand.
Look, definitely, right? And it's not just the designer, right? The company or the person from the business's point of view has to remember it does say brand guide, not brand rule book.
Yeah, good point. Absolutely.
Because I think it's important to understand that it's a basis for everything that you do. And often, especially when you talk about the really big international companies, they'll have fairly comprehensive examples of each and every element and how they suggest it be designed. But it is a guide. It's not set in stone. You know, there should be some flexibility there.
There should. And, yeah, designers really should inject their own creativity and, in my opinion, always push the boundaries of the guidelines so that, you know, it's still within the overall look, but they're still, you know, super creative with it.
Definitely, definitely. Look, I think there's a couple of things with a brand guide, right? We've already said it. It's a guide, right?
Yep.
I guess one of the things when you're talking about a company and a designer, And a big question that comes up for us regularly is who is responsible for maintaining the brand integrity, right? Because, you know, there's one instance where I know of in a big international company where a local marketing team, the whole team was basically either fired or transferred for going right away from the global brand guidelines.
Yeah.
Right? Because they were warned, they were told, you know, listen, we're trying to maintain a brand integrity here. And they just refuse to do it. And you know, in that instance, you know, we as the design company that were doing the work, we were constantly coming back and saying, you know, this, what you're asking for is very difficult to fit within the brand guides. You know, you're asking for imagery that is not cohesive with your brand's character. You're asking for colours that conflict or are not defined within the style guides, you know.
Yeah.
And I feel, I don't know how you feel about it, but I think it is the designer's responsibility. If they're aware that there's a brand guide of some sort, to read it and to do their best to stay in line with that. And if the client is asking to go away from that, not a little bit away, I mean, we need flexibility, but miles away from it, then, you know, in a way, I kind of think it's the designer's responsibility to put their hand up and say, look, you know, reviewing what you've supplied me, just like a design brief, you know, reviewing what you've supplied me, this really is not cohesive with what's in the brand guide, right? And we've done that. And we've had companies come back and say, yes, we understand that. However, in this instance, this is a specific campaign and it's going to have these results and this is why we're doing it. And we do it anyway, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. What do you think?
Well, look, I guess the big question is, you know, do they suck? And if so, why do they suck?
What, the brand guide?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, but even if it sucks, it's still the company's brand guide.
Well, it is. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, you know, we've It depends on, you know, there's so many different levels of brand guidelines, from just a logo brand guideline to, you know, a whole license brand guideline. And look, you know, as a business, we've traditionally designed T-shirts, you know, over the last 20 years or so, and we've come across a lot of style guides for, you know, various licenses, from, you know, car brands to sporting goods brands, you know, even to movie brands like Disney, Warner Brothers, Simpsons, etc. And look, they used to be really good to deal with, from the point of view that we could even, like, if we had a, we had a one instance where there was a cross promotion between Warner Brothers characters and AFL, and we were allowed to draw the characters, like hand illustrate them. You couldn't do that today. They just don't let you anymore. But there was a lot more flexibility, you know, way back in the day. And these days, I think they're so much tighter, and it can be, you know, it can be a good thing if the brand is established enough that it's going to, you know, have congruency across every touch point. It will really help that brand, you know, stick to its true identity. But at the same time, if they're a little bit looser, then it can really help the designer, in my opinion.
There's two sides to why a brand guide would suck, right? And I don't think they suck, okay? I think they can be good, right? But I think a poorly designed brand guide, right, doesn't give you anything to work with as a designer, right? So there are some brand guides where, you know, they've got nothing about the brand character. They've got nothing about the use of imagery. They've got nothing about... They give you a set of colours, but they don't talk to you about the how and why those colours are important and where they should be used. You know, like, I've seen brand guides say, well, here's three colours you can use. But yeah, they don't tell you which is a primary colour, you know, which are secondary colours, if one should be used as a preference, you know. And I think the other thing too is, even a well-designed brand guide, if it's used as a rigid set of rules, right, how on earth is a designer supposed to inject creativity? You know, they're almost working template work, and that really sucks. I mean, you know, as a designer, you want to be able to inject creativity into every piece that you do. Even if there's a well-established, well-rounded brand guide, there is the ability to inject creativity. I think the other reason brand guides could suck, right, is that, If they're used too rigidly, where is the ability to split test and to experiment with things that might convert better?
I mean, yeah, when there are so many restrictions, you know, they are a pain in the ass to deal with, because the results, you know, they end up terrible if you're restricted to a limited color palette, for instance. And, you know, they're probably, like, if you're designing a website and you've got a brand guideline, it's, you know, everything has to be green because that's what the brand guideline says. You know, that kind of goes against the fundamentals of having a contrast color for the main call to action, for instance. Or, you know, same with point of sale, if you want something to pop, you know, pop, you love that word, but contrast to the color palette is the word I'm looking for.
Look, absolutely, right? Like, I've had instances where we might be designing Google display ads, right? And the client is like swearing black and blue because we've used a yellow or a red button.
Yeah.
And they're like, that color's not in our brand guide. No, but it's a button. It serves a purpose.
That's right, yeah.
And if we did it in the blue of your branding, it would just get completely lost in the design, right?
Exactly.
So that's where having that flexibility is important. That's why they can suck, because some businesses, some companies, some people representing these businesses aren't willing to try new things, you know. And you talk about a website, you know, there are some colours that are just no-nos on websites. I mean, I've got clients with, you know, really bright yellows and bright oranges in their branding, which might look great in print, but online it looks absolutely atrocious.
And it's proven to, you know, turn visitors off if you have a really bright coloured background like yellow or orange or red. So, yeah, it could certainly work against the brand if they're not flexible.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so, you know, designers and business owners need to keep in mind that if used well, you know, a brand guideline can be awesome, I guess, right? Well, of course it can be awesome, right? But if not used well, right, or if the brief conflicts with the brand guidelines, right, or doesn't align with the brand guidelines, it can certainly confuse a designer. I mean, I've had jobs where, you know, we've done multiple iterations of a design because the brief that the client requested was difficult to fit within the brand guidelines. So we tried to make it fit, and then it was just a disaster because it didn't look cohesive with anything else that the company was doing.
So how did you fix it? Like, what was the outcome?
Well, I mean, we put a halt on the job. We just said, look, we need to talk about this. You're requesting X, right? Yet that just doesn't align with everything your company is about. So what, you know, what are we really trying to achieve? And then we just brought it back in to where it needed to be for that company, you know. Mm-hmm. So
a bit of a compromise.
Yeah, but I think the hardest thing was that the designer had been working on this company's work for like 3 years. So when they got this brief, they got confused. They weren't quite sure if they were doing it right or not. It was just, you know, it's that clarity of brief, that clarity of purpose that we've talked about so many times. Mm. The brand guidelines should establish that clarity of purpose.
Absolutely. I mean, that's really the purpose of having a brand guideline, so that, you know, whoever gets a hold of it understands the everything to do with why that company does what it does, and you know, the visuals that go with it.
Yeah, look, okay, so I guess that kind of brings us to the next important question. We've said, you know, why do brand guidelines suck? They don't really, right? So really the question is, why do they rock? Why are they awesome? Particularly when they're well designed and well implemented or used well.
Sure. So, I mean, you've already touched on things like, you know, primary color palettes, secondary color palettes, and I couldn't agree more. It's good to have direction on that. But, you know, a really comprehensive guideline or style guide will have more than just colors and variations of, you know, logos, but also like elements that you could accompany the logo or the brand, like patterns, like background patterns, etc., and a variety of them to choose from as well, just makes it a lot easier for the designer to get a much more creative, you know, varied result.
Look, I agree. Look, a well-designed, well-implemented brand guide gives the designer a vision for the brand, and then in turn a vision for that individual piece that they're working on, which is an awesome starting point for design. You know, you have elements that you can work with, and then what you've got to do is inject your creativity into that design. I think from the customer's point of view as well, or the company's point of view, if it's a well-designed brand guideline, it's well implemented and it's being used as a guide, not as a rule book, it reduces the amount of back and forth with design. You know, if your branding specifies very clearly that the logo should always sit in the top right corner, you don't have to go back and go, oh, show me one version with it in the top right, one in the top left, one in the bottom right.
Yeah.
Well, we don't have to worry about that because the designer knows where it's meant to be. And, you know, stuff like that is a guide. And if it just doesn't work on that piece, the designer's going to move the logo to a more appropriate place. But it's a great starting point.
Yeah, so you're really saving money by having a guideline when you're hiring designers.
Absolutely. Well, you know what? That makes a really interesting point. You talk about when you're hiring designers, it also makes it very easy to start with a new designer or use a different supplier. I mean, I'm not suggesting business owners chop and change your designers, right? But there are scenarios where you might have a designer that is, you know, absolutely fabulous at everything, but if they need to build a trade show display, for example, the company that builds a trade show display often has specialist designers that are familiar with working in that three-dimensional design to build the trade show display. So if you can hand a brand guideline to that supplier, again, they've got a really good jumping off point to get started. It saves you a lot of pain as far as, you know, potentially them doing a whole design that's just miles away from where your company needs to be.
Yeah, really good point. And I guess, you know, from the point of view that if you have all these different touch points, you want them to be congruent across everything. And, you know, as a whole, it's more memorable for the end user to, you know, to have, you know, visuals in their mind from the previous touch point. When they get to the next one, everything has the same, you know, overall look and feel. And it's just, it's better for the company overall, for brand perception, sorry.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it keeps your brand consistent and it builds brand equity. And I mean, there's huge value in brand equity today. I mean, if you look at a company like Coca-Cola, their stock value has very little to do with the product they actually sell.
What do they sell, mate?
Well, Coca-Cola, Amatil sell just about every soft drink on the planet. So, you know. But
they're probably in the real estate game by now.
Yeah, well, but the thing is, right, at the end of the day, they've done such a good job with that brand consistency and building brand equity that there's a huge value in that for, you know, a shareholder, or if you're a smaller company, maybe an acquiring company, or if you ever want to sell or go public. So, you know, having those brand guidelines are there. And look, you know, a well-designed brand guideline, I think, has one major, major benefit, and it's something that I harp on about all the time, but it gives a business a real clarity of purpose in their design.
Absolutely. So even if you're a small business, would you highly recommend it?
Absolutely. If you don't have one, and I think that's going to be my listener action later, is consider how would you build one. You know, some of the brand guidelines that you and I have worked with, I mean, you and I have both done licensed work where we're, you know, dealing with big licensed brands. We've also worked with big international companies. You know, some of these brand guidelines are huge and extremely comprehensive. Now, does a small business need one that's that big? Probably not. But take elements from that. You know, every good brand guideline that I've ever worked with starts with a section about the brand. It's got nothing to do with the logo, colors, you know, design samples. It's got nothing at all to do with that. It's got to do with the character of the brand. Who is the brand? You know, who are they talking to? Who are their customers? How do they want to communicate? Right?
Yeah, nice.
Well, and then it goes into, okay, so you know who we are and what we want to communicate and who we're communicating to. Right? Now, here are the tools you've got. Here's the logo. Here's the color palette. Here's the font sets. Here's examples of the character of the copy that we want to use. Here's an example of how you might design a sales piece. Here's an example of how you might use our elements online. You know, so there's two parts to it, you know, and having that clarity of purpose, that first section, I think goes a long, long way. You know, who are you, you know, as a business?
Yeah, and I think what I was about to touch on is it really needs to appeal to your target audience more than anything. So, you know, if you don't have one at all, I mean, there's a couple of things you could do. You could, you know, have a look at your existing branding overall. But if you don't really have, if it's a bit of a mess, for instance, you know, just when you're thinking about creating a new brand look, think of your target customer and how it would, you know, reflect in their mind.
Definitely. And ask your designer, you know, say to your designer, okay, listen, I'm trying to build a style guide. I'm trying to build a brand guideline. You know, can you tell me the how and why of this piece that you've designed? You know, Greg, you've designed me a website. You know, tell me why you've used the elements that you've used in our website.
Because it looks good.
Because it pops. No, but tell me why. Why have you chosen those colours? Why that primary colour? Why that type of button? Why have you positioned our logo where you've positioned it? You know, and that, you know, you can start with just a lot of examples of your current branding. That's a great start. And then build from there. Look, I guess that kind of brings us to something, the, you know, our listener action, which is something the listener can go out and do this week. What's your listener action?
Sure, man. So, look, if you don't have a brand guideline at all, if you are a small business, or even, I guess if you're a larger business, you probably have one by now, but just review all of your graphics that you've had designed, you know, recently, I guess, over the last, you know, maybe year or two. If it's any older than that, you probably want to start again and, you know, hire a designer to give you a fresh new look. But, just pick what you like, you know, what feels the best across all of it. And for starters, it might not feel congruent across all of your touch points. So pick the one that you feel is the best and then, you know, potentially submit that to your designer and see if he can create a brand guideline around what you think looks the best, but also get the designer's input and, you know, hopefully they've got a questionnaire around this, which is all about, you know, who's the target customer, et cetera. And then they can, you know, pull together a look for you to then roll out across all of your touch points.
I know it sounds difficult, but it's worth the time invested.
Yeah.
and money. I mean, if you're paying a professional company to do this for you, it's worth the time and money because it will save you a lot in the future. Look, my listener question is a little similar to Greg's, but probably a little shorter and simpler. You know, just lay your work out in front of you and ask yourself, am I staying on brand?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
You know, and two things are going to come from that. You're either not going to be staying on brand, you either are or aren't going to be staying on brand, or you're not going to know what your brand is meant to represent.
Mm, right? Awesome.
So, and that's where you do what Greg said, and just start, you know, write down why you exist. Why does my company exist? You know, who are we here to serve? What are we here to deliver? How do we want to talk to our customers? You know, a brand guide, we're working on a brand guide at the moment for a company that works directly with automotive mechanics. Right? Very different to a B2B corporate in the way they communicate. You know, so you've got to work it out. You've got to work it out for yourself.
Yeah. And just think, how do you want to be perceived?
Exactly. Get cool. Your brand guide. They don't suck.
Nice. All right. Well, thank you very much, Al. It's a short episode this week, but it's been a good one.
Yeah. Short, sharp, and punchy. Farewell and thank you, listener, for joining us today. Please go to therealmagic.com and sign up so we can let you know when there's a new episode. And we would love some 5-star feedback and comments on iTunes. Greg and I make an effort to reply to everybody. Greg, thanks for recording with me today. It's been great fun.
It has, buddy. Thank you, listener. Thanks, Al. Take care.
Thanks for listening to The Real Magic Podcast. Hear more at therealmagic.com.